full engagement and participation and support the First Nation communities, and I think there's a good fit.
For the utility, the hope is that Fontaine will be able to build consensus with First Nations communities. His appointment comes at a time when New Brunswick is getting ready to expand resource development with pipeline construction and shale gas exploration. Many Native leaders have been critical of those plans. Fontaine says he doesn't see his role as a liaison between NB Power and First Nations, but he does want to bring more transparency to the resource development projects. On the issue of the continuing First Nations protests against shale gas exploration, Fontaine would not comment, only saying First Nations people must be included in negotiations on resource development, which in many cases could be a challenge. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
It's been nearly a month since the president and his administration met with tribal leaders. Tribal leaders from across the country traveled to the nation's capital, taking their concerns to Obama. The government-to-government relationship continues year-round, and as Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zhorov reports, a Wyoming tribal leader says progress is being made.
This was the first time that Darwin St. Clair, chairman of the Eastern Shoshone Business Council, attended the conference, and he says he was pleased.
I felt like we were actually making progress, and, you know, it may not have been big steps, but we're making steps forward.
St. Clair said a highlight of the trip was a consultation he had with administrators from the Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of the Interior.
And a lot of times when you go to D.C., you'll talk to staffers, or you'll talk to other individuals that, you know, then relay your message to the higher-ups. And for us to have that opportunity to have a face-to-face and see the administrator, McCarthy, face-to-face was a great opportunity.
St. Clair says environmental and energy issues were some of his biggest talking points. The tribe has worked to take over the solid waste program on the Wind River Reservation and is looking to take on more environmental monitoring duties. He says he hopes to keep talking to the EPA about assistance with technical and administrative skills and training for the tribe. For National Native News, I'm Irina Zhorov.
The Hopi tribe in Arizona is trying to stop the auction of sacred items. According to the Associated Press, the tribe took a Paris auction house to court Tuesday. The sale is scheduled for next week. There are more than 30 items reportedly up for auction. The tribe tried to prevent a similar auction in April, but a court ruled the sales are legal in France. Dozens of items were sold in that auction. Some have been returned to the tribe by art dealers. A judge is expected to make a decision on the tribe's request Friday. Native American baseball player Jacoby Ellsbury has reportedly reached an agreement with the New York Yankees. Ellsbury made his major league debut with the Boston Red Sox in 2007. According to news reports, the 30-year-old reached a 7-year agreement with the Yankees Tuesday for $153 million. Many people in Indian country have championed the player as Red Sox fans. He's also become a role model to many Native youth. News of his move to the Yankees has been met with mixed reaction on social media by Native fans. On this day in 2000, then U.S. Department of Energy Secretary Bill Richardson signed an agreement to return more than 80,000 acres of land to the Northern Ute Tribe. In 1916, the government took the land in Utah, called the Naval Shell Reserve No. 2. It was taken from the Ute Reservation to secure its rich oil shell deposits as a potential source of fuel for the Navy's oil-burning ships. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And we're back at 3.06 p.m., and this is a Juneau afternoon. My guest today, first one, is Charles Rohrbacher. He's here to offer a preview of his first Friday show at the Samovar Cafe. Hi, Charles. How are you?
Well, I'm good. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, very good. Can you tell us a little bit about your show? And I see it's the material that you've got in front of you.
Well, I the last 3 years, I've been doing some books for the publisher, the Liturgical Press. This is they do ritual books for the Catholic Church, actually, and I'm a Catholic deacon, so it's a perfect fit. And I guess I'm an icon painter too. That helps. So, in 2000 and and 11, I did a book called the Illuminated Easter Proclamation, and they invited me to do another book called The Passions of Holy Week. These are the gospel readings of the Passion of Christ for Palm Sunday and Good Friday that are used in the Catholic liturgy. And they decided to do this book bilingually, so it's in English and Spanish. And I did 37 illustrations. I won't be exhibiting all of them, but at the little Samovar Cafe, they have a lovely little space with lights, and it's kind of intimate space where I'll have about 22 pieces of original artwork from the book. It may seem a little odd that although it's about Jesus, it's not about his birth, but about his passion and death. This may not seem terrifically Christmassy, but at the same time, it's all related to that larger story of his life and death and resurrection. So, as I say, I have framed original work on the wall.
Okay, and for our listeners out there who may not be familiar with icons, can you tell a little bit about how they're created and the medium that's used in order to make them?
Sure. Icons are the traditional liturgical art of the church before it was divided between Catholics and Orthodox and Protestants. It's a tradition that's been particularly maintained in the East. In just before the show, we were talking about your visit to Greece and seeing.
Oh yeah, I let that out of the bag. Yeah, we've been to a few Greek Orthodox churches over there.
Exactly. And of course, here in Alaska, many people are familiar with the Russian Orthodox Church around the state and how there are icons in them. Well, an icon is an image of Jesus or Mary or the saints or some event from salvation history. There's a particular stylized way of depicting the human form. They're based on scripture and tradition. Traditionally, icons are painted in egg tempera. All of the images that I'll be exhibiting are in egg tempera in that medium on paper because they're illustrations for a book. But icons can also be painted in acrylic, in fresco on walls, in caustic, which is where wax is and pigment are mixed together, hot wax, or in mosaic. Many people have seen icon mosaics. So those are the kind of the different media that are used. But these are more intimate images. The largest one is 11 by 9 inches, so they're not really big, but I would hope they'd be worth coming to look at, and you can get close to them and see them.
Of course. And yeah. Your book, is that going to be available at that time too or not?
Oh, I wish. The good people at the Liturgical Press sent me an advance copy from the printer about 3 weeks ago, and the book just arrived at the publisher on last Thursday or Friday was when I spoke to them. And so I'll have, if people are interested in ordering the book, I'll have an order form that they can use. I'll have one copy that people can look at if they'd like to see them.
Okay, very good.
Very good.
And again, what time is your show going to be?
Well, it'll be part of a gallery walk.
It's all the gallery walk.
All
okay.
Gallery walks, 4:30 to 7. The good people at Samovar's are going to make some Russian hors d'oeuvres, I think, to put out, and Dale Weigant and Steve Tata are going to come by and play a little bit of music during that time too, which will be kind of nice. So. They're down on 245 Marine Way, where the Paradise Bakery used to be, right across from Marine Park.
Okay, very good. And everybody come out and take a look at Charles's icons that he created.
Thank you.
Angels, we have heard of high, sweetly singing all your names, and long
And we're back in the studio. I've got Christy Shambor with me today, and she's going to give us an update on the KTOO holiday auction. Hi, Christy.
Hey, Ken. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
Good, good. So, the auction. Today's item of the day is a $30 gift certificate to Pinky's Fish Market. Have you been there?
No, I haven't been to the fish market.
Okay, it's fantastic. It's over in the Nugget Mall Annex, and they have this amazing fresh seafood, wild game.
I know exactly where that is.
Yeah.
That's right across from the McDonald's.
It's right over there.
And right next to the Subway.
It's kind
one
of like
three.
A, yeah, it's kind of like this secret, fabulous place where you can get all of this, like, locally, you know, from local boats, seafood from local boats, wild game. And they're actually doing an Alaskan sushi class on December 19th at 7 p.m. To learn to make the spicy king salmon roll. And there are item of the day. $30 gift certificate. You have until 4 p.m. to bid at ktoo.org for the gift certificate.
Okay. And what other items do we have out there?
Okay. Here we go, Ken. So the furniture from Duke's Designs, it's this amazing handcrafted furniture. There's still a bidding war going on. You should check out his website to see for holiday gifts and such. He's got very, very beautiful pieces. But, you know, you need to get your final bids in very soon. Bidding will end tomorrow at noon, so don't wait. Pounce. Pounce now on the auction. Also, let's see, we have some gift certificates that are still up for grabs. If you look under the section on the auction, no bids, there's a number of gift certificates there which might be of interest to some people. We have a Wild Oven gift package that's on there. Then people need to check that out. And also a Holiday Lights tour of Juneau with the pint-sized bus. This just came on board yesterday.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Yes.
I was looking the other night.
It's pretty cool. So it's 2 hours in the party bus, and you can take up to 12 friends and go check out the spectacular lights of Juneau for the holidays.
And there are still some Eagle Crest passes for the season that are on there.
Yes.
And Eagle Crest opens on the 7th. So
correct.
This Saturday, Eagle Crest opens for the season.
Yeah, so everything's online, ktoo.org. Just click on the big auction banner. You can't miss it. You'll go right to our catalog, and just make sure all your bids are in by noon tomorrow.
Okay.
Cool.
Anything else you wanted to add on the auction?
That's it. Thank you, Ken.
Okay, very good. Thanks again, Christy.
Bye.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 4th of December, 2013. It was on this date, 1674, that a French Jesuit priest, Father Jacques Marquette, built a log cabin on the shore of Lake Michigan near the mouth of the Chicago River. He wanted to establish a mission there. A snowstorm dumped a foot of snow overnight. Marquette came down with dysentery, but it was a good location. They could move between the lake and the Chicago River, to the Illinois River, and to the Mississippi, just a short portage. It's the birthday of Rilke, Raina Maria Rilke, born in Prague, 1875. His mother, the year before he was born, had given birth to a girl who died after a week, and she dressed her little boy in dresses and braided his hair and treated him like a girl. He grew up to become a poet and supported himself by seducing a series of wealthy noble women, one of whom lent him her castle, the Castle Duino, near Trieste, a medieval castle, where during the winter of 1912, alone in the castle, Rilke said he heard the voice of an angel speaking to him about the meaning of life. He wrote a cycle of 10 long poems that he called the Duino Elegies. It was the great masterpiece of his lifetime. It's the birthday of the philosopher Thomas Carlyle, born in Ecclefechan, Scotland, in 1795, author of A History of the French Revolution, which Dickens used as his primary reference when he was writing A Tale of Two Cities. It was on this date, 1867, Oliver Kelly founded The Grange, the order of the patrons of husbandry, the oldest agricultural society in the country. It represented farmers in their disputes with the railroads and established free rural mail delivery. And it's the birthday of Cornell Woolrich, born New York City in 1903. Started out writing novels inspired by the work of F. Scott Fitzgerald, then wrote detective novels, which became movies, The Bride Wore Black and Night Has a Thousand Eyes. Here's a poem for today by David Shoemate, entitled Amish. You see them in their black carriages along the highway, as if they got separated from some funeral cortege, and now must deliver the dead on their own. The men wear beards but shave their mustaches. The women wear long dresses and tight bonnets. The children play with wooden toys and point when they pass televisions glowing along the roads, as if each house had a soul all its own. They keep bees, raise crops, train teams of horses so large they look like they've been exaggerated. If an Amish man promises to meet you at noon by the courthouse with a dozen cages of chickens, he'll be there. When the children are about to turn into adults, they go on a rumspringa to see which world suits them best. Girls dangle jewelry from their ears and necks, smear makeup on. Boys get behind the wheel of a car, barrel down gravel roads, stop in a field, and baptize themselves with a bottle of gin. A few go out for football. The girls join the cheerleading squad. Then return home, smelling a perfume or cologne, giggling as they stumble up the stairs long after the candles have been blown out. A poem by David Shoemate, Amish, from Kimonos in the Closet, published by University of Pittsburgh Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And we're back at 3:21 on a Juno afternoon. My guests today are representatives for the Alaska Native Dialogues on Racial Equality, or ANDOR. They're going to tell us about that. And it's MK, Amalia, and Christy. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and please tell us a little bit about the project.
Well, thanks for having us, Ken. I really appreciate the opportunity to let the community know about this opportunity happening tonight to talk a little bit more about race in our community. There's basically a small group of community members who've organized to kind of spearhead different initiatives in town working for racial justice. And one thing that we've found is the First Alaskans Institute has been working on a really successful statewide project called ANDOR, the Alaska Native Dialogues on Racial Equity. And what it is it's a series of dialogues based around indigenous values and kind of listening practices that help a community to really move towards healing through creating a safe space to really talk about the experience of race and racism for diverse members of a community, and then to talk about strategic ways that the community can solve problems of racial inequity. And it starts with a group from First Alaskans Institute facilitating it, but they work with host groups in different communities. So they're working with our host group here in Juneau to together facilitate a conversation for our town. So this is just kind of a really brief conversation we'll have tonight. It's at 5 o'clock, and it'll go till almost about 7. And we see it as a bit of a tip of the iceberg, kind of starting the conversation and using some of their guiding principles to set it up. And then we'll see kind of, you know, there's been a dedicated group of individuals, you know, from around the community who've been interested in this conversation, interested in making social change in our community, and seeing kind of what the next steps might be for all of us, whether it's continuing the dialogue in diverse places around town or creating policy solutions, et cetera. So tonight we're really excited about just kind of gathering together and using this framework to guide us.
Okay, and approximately, you know, how many people do you anticipate showing up? Of course, this is tonight here after all, so what kind of space do you have available and how many people can you accommodate?
Well, the event is happening at the Rec Center, which is just across from the university. It starts at 5. We've got some delicious pizza that we're going to be offering to our guests. Elizabeth Medicine Crow is one of the organizers of Andor. So if you haven't heard her before, she is just a delight to listen to. I really resonate with some of those core values of the Andor and the First Alaskan Institute, which are integrity, responsibility, respect, and taking responsibility for our racial divides as well as our racial healing. And so the principles are to come together to create conversations where we can reach some understanding. From understanding comes connection. From connection comes healing. And from healing comes growth. So it's an exciting opportunity.
Is this broken into somewhat intimate groups, or is it more of a lecture sort of presentation?
You know, what I think is really great about First Alaskans Institute and this project in particular is that they've really researched and honed in on some different social technologies to organize groups to facilitate dialogue. So, you know, we may be used to different setups like a panel or a fishbowl dialogue or just getting a bunch of people together and one person talks at a time. There's a lot of different ways to set up a conversation, and I think that they've really looked into diverse ways to set that up so that as many people can learn in different ways at the event. So I'm not entirely sure what all of those are going to be, but I know that it's going to be a variety of talking and listening methods used this evening.
And we are very fortunate to have the University Honor Program sponsoring the event tonight and offering pizza. So we're not sure how many people are coming, but we have 15 large pizzas to share with the community and drinks, thanks to the UAS Honors Program and Saul Neely for offering that and organizing that. And we, as a small group in Juneau, when we were discussing this issue and how to address it, we realized that Andor was going to be in town. They're here for another conference. So they are generously adding to a long day, this dialogue this evening, and so we're kind of pulling it together a little bit spur of the moment because we recognize there's a great opportunity, and there will be more to come. There'll be follow-up in the new year, for sure. Tonight's just a starting point.
All right, MK. And Christy, do you want to say a little bit about the movie that's going to be run, too, because that's also part of the list that I got?
Mm-hmm. You know, unfortunately, I don't know a lot of specifics about the movie, but I know that it's the last in a series from the Alaska Native Film Series that Kune, Lance Twitchell, and others organized at the university. They've had, I think, about 4 films so far running through November, and tonight's the final one. The movie is called Skins, and we specifically ended the plan to end the Andor dialogue at 6:45 so that people can attend the movie at 7. I think that it's going to be a relevant movie and probably one that we're going to want to discuss further at conversations in the future. And so we're trying to make sure that we allow time for both events this evening.
Okay, so but the movie's a little bit flexible as far as the dialogues go. It's probably not going to be exactly at 7 o'clock then. It's a little bit movable.
The movie will start promptly at 7 as scheduled. They're separate but connected events.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, very good. And free pizza. Wow.
I think I think one thing that's occurring to me to mention, too, is that, you know, racism is nothing new in town, and racial justice is nothing new in town in terms of people working for it. And so when we say that tonight's the first night in starting the conversation, it's certainly not true. There's people who've been having this conversation their entire lives, been working on it their entire lives, you know, who go to work every day and are working on racial justice, and it's just not called that overtly. And so I want to give a lot of applause and credence to the work that's being done. I think what we mean by starting tonight is that we're really excited about the model that Andor brings to our town and the experience and wisdom that First Alaskans Institute has in working on this project for the past year and having seen so much success with it. Not only is it a model for dialogue and conversation, but it's actually a statewide model for grassroots organizing. You know, this is Liz Medicine Crow and Kyle Work from First Alaskans Institute are the ones who are going to be facilitating the dialogue tonight, and among others within First Alaskans Institute have organized these. But they are very savvy, graceful, wonderful, brilliant people who are most interested in cultivating the skills needed to have others facilitate it in their own community. Obviously, they can't travel to every town every time there's a conversation on race, right? So they're going into different communities, really working on who are the stakeholders, who are the passionate people. Everyone who wants to be there should be there. Everybody who is there are the right people there, and really working with their strengths and the connections that they have to enact change in their community. So after they fly out of here on the plane back to Anchorage, the work continues to be being done. And so I'm just really excited to get to hang with them and learn from them and experience the model that's been so successful for them and for other communities in the state.
All right, Christy, and would you remind everybody exactly where the event is being held tonight and at what time?
It's at 5 o'clock at the University Rec Center, and everybody is invited. This is open to everybody, whether it's a difficult topic, but the goal is a really joyful, positive goal here to work towards equity. So it's I think racism is a scary concept, and certainly nobody attending or organizing claims to be an expert or know more than attendees who are coming. Everybody's welcome, whether you've been working in this field for a long time addressing this issue, whether you're just interested in starting a conversation. We're hoping lots of people will come.
All right, MK, Amalia, Christy, thank you very much for being part of the show today.
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Ken.
Christmases be well. Christmases be well.
That was Bing Crosby's White Christmas. I'm just trying to get everybody in the mood for the holidays here. And with me in the studio now is Judy Morley and Margie Hamburger from the Juno Douglas City Museum. And greetings to both of you. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you.
And what are we talking about with the summer quilt show?
Well, traditionally, our quilt shows for Capital City Quilters are done once a year or every other year. And this is a year that we're not doing one. And the museum and the quilters got together and decided they wanted to do a small local show with a 20-25 quilts that have the topic of outside my window. And we are looking for fiber artists who would like to participate in this. We certainly don't want it to be a closed shop where only Capital City quilters are in it. And we'd like commitments from the community, from people who sew or don't sew, but work with fabric, who want to participate in this. We needed items that are quilted, items that are beaded, you know, beaded type things, sparkles, whatever. It's a wide open field. The only restrictions are, well, there's a couple of restrictions. One is that we want the quilts to be between 48 inches in around the perimeter to 144 inches. So essentially 3 feet by 3 feet or 1 foot by 1 foot or anywhere in between. And we won them by March 18th.
Yeah, and this is a collaboration, as you said before, between Capital City Quilters and the City Museum, which is one of our missions at the City Museum is to do collaborations with community groups. So we're really excited to have this kind of partnership and also to encourage quilters to come up with new ideas and want to be quilters or want to be people who have fiber art inclinations to be inspired to get involved and to contribute a piece to this exhibit.
So these pieces can be anything from a foot square larger to 3 foot square then, mm-hmm. is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Correct, correct. And then they'll go on exhibit in May and will be up for the summer, so it will be a really fun show for the tourists to enjoy as well. And so that's part of the reason for this outside my window theme is, again, to kind of make it a very place-based and very personal for the artists who are going to be creating these quilts and then, you know, share that not only with the community but with all our visitors as well.
And I want to make sure people don't think that they have to do a scene that's outside my window. It can be fish, flowers, mountains, waterfalls, ocean, whatever it is that could possibly be seen outside the window of a Juno home.
Okay, so nobody's got to be a huge landscape artist or anything like that to put this together at all.
There have been some things that are coming to the quilt shows like kids playing on the beach at Sandy Beach would be a really great thing, you know, that kind of thing. So
right. Open to interpretation. To encourage creativity. But
the thing that we're really looking for right now is people to make that commitment. We've got about a dozen people who are working on quilts now, and we have more wall to cover than a dozen quilts will cover. And so we're looking for another dozen people or another dozen commitments for the wall.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and if people want to find out how to make that commitment, probably the easiest thing is to go to the City Museum's website, and on the left sidebar it says Exhibit Opportunities. And when you click on that, it'll take you to the page where it can link you to the information about this quilt show, contact information, details about submissions, and so that'd be a great place to go to let us know that you're interested in committing.
Unfortunately, I made up the flyer, and I put in my email address wrong, so that doesn't help very much. But
that's okay. Go ahead and read it off right now. Everybody's
okay,
listening.
It is bdorja@yahoo.com. And so or my number is 586-4344. If anybody would like to do that. Another opportunity is going to come up, too, as far as being able to donate your quilt to the museum should they want it. And it's kind of fun to know that you've got a piece of work that's going to be seen for eons. You know,
oh, and by everybody that comes in off of a boat this
well,
May,
whenever
too.
They display it at any rate.
Yeah, but that's not required, but it could be an opportunity. If
no, but it will be required for the quilt to stay on display until October the 25th.
Right.
So you don't want to make something you want to give Grandma for Christmas in September.
No, this is something that you should make just for this.
Just for this opportunity, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, Judy, Margie, thank you very much for coming in. It's been a pleasure having you this afternoon.
Okay, and just to remind people, if they want to get on the website, they can get their information there.
Okay, very good. Thanks.
This is Bird Note. The world of birds has its bullies, too. Take, for example, the South Polar Skua. Tom Johnson, a seabird observer on NOAA ships, describes what skuas eat in addition to fish.
During the summer in Antarctica, South Polar skuas will end up feeding their young by catching and killing the chicks of other seabirds. Skuas often take up camp around large seabird colonies like penguin rookeries.
Once their breeding season is finished, South Polar skuas will then fly all the way to northern oceans, such as the North Atlantic, to find large flocks of shearwaters or gulls or terns. They hang out along the periphery, waiting for those birds to find food.
As soon as a shearwater comes up with food and a skua happens to take notice, that shearwater is in serious trouble. Shearwater will pull up a squid or something and take off. And if a skua sees it, it'll come in and sometimes strike the shearwater, sometimes land on top of the shearwater and bite it and strike it with its bill and hit it with its wings, all in the hope that the shearwater will throw up the squid or the fish that it had just caught. They're true bullies of the ocean.
For a look into the world of seabird surveys, begin at our website, birdnote.org.
Hey, it's 3:41, and you're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Ken Fix, your host today, and I'm here with Bruce Botello, who is going to give us a preview of Wednesday's Juno World Affairs Council presentation on the recent elections in Germany. Hi, Bruce. Welcome to the studio.
Hi again.
Okay, and tell us a little bit about your presentation.
Well, what I'm going to be doing tonight is reviewing the outcome of the September 22nd elections in Germany. German elections, like the U.S., are held every 4 years. Probably at that point, the similarities are few and far between. Germany has a parliamentary system in which the majority party, or the prevailing party, I should put it that way, is authorized to form a government. In this case, while the Christian and social unions combined got about 45% of the vote, they failed to get a majority, and that is forcing them to look at a coalition government, which has been in the works ever since that election. And the bride in this particular marriage is the Social Democratic Party. And after about 5.5 weeks of negotiations, direct negotiations, an agreement was reached last week, which is now being presented to the membership of the Social Democratic Party, which has until next Thursday to complete its membership vote on whether to join the PAC or not. And the very fact of a vote for the Social Democrats, the party, is an extraordinary measure, which reflected the precarious position that the leadership of that party had in entering negotiations with the Christian and Social Democrat or Union of Germany. So that's in long and in short, talking about the outcome, the major issues that evolved in, during the course of the campaign, and what ultimately this coalition will mean for the United States, and what would happen in the event that the membership of the Social Democratic Party actually rejects the agreement.
Okay, and can you tell us a little bit more about the World Affairs Council, what they do, and some of the notable speakers you've had come here in the last few years? I know that Governor Parnell has been here. So
we've officially been in existence since the 1980s. The goal of the World Affairs Council is, as it implies, to bring Junoites in touch with events that are taking place in the world, have an opportunity to actually get behind the scenes, get a sense of analysis about what's happening in various parts of the world. And the World Affairs Council has achieved that primarily through its speaker programs, usually once and sometimes twice a month, where we'll bring an outside speaker to Juneau. We also have hosted annually for the last 10 years a weekend forum. It's usually 2 to 3 days. It might take a particular area of the world or topic. So just in October, we devoted our annual theme to our relations with Canada. We have done similar programs for Europe, South America, Asia. We've had programs on such topics as climate change as well in terms of these longer forums where we bring in 6 to 10 speakers and panelists to be able to allow Junoites to really get into in-depth discussions. And then we have one other program which is, I think, particularly interesting, and that is what we call our Tuesday night travelogues, which are opportunities for Junoites to hear from their friends and neighbors who have traveled abroad and who, as it would suggest, would do a travelogue on a particular country or region in a country that they visited. It usually is in the form of a PowerPoint or sometimes movies done in a theater setting, and the Nickelodeon has graciously made their facilities available for us to do these travelogues. And again, it brings home to me the wide variety of interests that Junoites have. They're well-traveled. They are world travelers, and offer again this, I think, perspective on what's happening in other parts of the world and Juneau's connectivity to it.
Okay, yeah, the Gold Town Nickelodeon's a nice venue for somebody to put on a PowerPoint or run their movies. That's just incredible that they're letting you do that.
Yeah, it's been a great relationship, and we're very appreciative of that, as well as the other sponsors we've had for our programs. All of our events that we call our educational events, whether it's the forum, whether it's our regular speakers program, or the Tuesday night travelogues, are free to the public. And that leads me to point to the one thing that we do is our annual fundraiser, which is a great fundraiser as well. And that is what we call World Quest, which this next year will take place on January 24th. And it's basically your trivia on international events, whether in the arena of sports or politics, and people form teams. It is built around a wonderful catered meal as well, and it is the highlight of our season as the General World Affairs Council.
Okay, Bruce, and remind everybody the time and the location for your show.
I'll be speaking tonight on the German federal elections at 5 o'clock in the K2 studios here, the TV studios, and presentation and Q&A will go from 5 to 6, and that will be followed immediately after by the annual meeting. It's a potluck, and people listening are invited to come down and join us for both events.
Okay, Bruce, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Ken.
Support for this program comes from Art Matters, providing 25 years of custom framing services for prints, photos, and much more, plus an on-site gallery showcasing Alaskan prints and posters. More information at 789-4370.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
You've all been told, and a real famous cat all dressed up in red, and he spends the whole year working out in his sled. It's the little Saint Nick,
little Saint Nick.
It's the little Saint Nick,
little Saint Nick.
Just a little box sled, we call little Saint Nick. But she'll walk in the fog and look before she sticks. She candy apple red with a key for a wheel, and with Santa hits the gas when she watch her.
Well, that was part of the Beach Boys' Little Saint Nick, and now I'm going to talk to Jeffra from Eagle Crest, and she's going to give us an update on how we're progressing in the Ski Town Throwdown and the opening of Eagle Crest this weekend. Hi, Jeffra.
Hi. Well, thanks for having me on the show this afternoon.
Of course.
Yeah. So, yep, Eagle Crest is, we're pretty excited because we are now in the finals of Powder Magazine's Ski Town Throwdown. Last night we beat out Mount Bohemia, Michigan by a pretty sizable margin, and so that puts Eagle Crest in the finals, which is amazing because when we first started this this road, our goal was to get to round two, and they picked 64 ski areas. We were one of them, and lo and behold, now we are in the finals.
Oh, yeah. We had to beat just about everything in British Columbia.
We did. So we're the Great White North champion, and so now we'll find ourselves up against either Crested Butte, Colorado, or Stevens Pass, Washington.
Okay, and when is that final bout going to take place between us and whoever the other opponent is going to be?
Right, that'll start Monday, December 9th, and it runs for a whole week through Friday, December 13th, and you can vote once every 24 hours. So we're thanking the entire community and all of our supporters for getting us this far. And, you know, we might as well just take the Cinderella pumpkin ride all the way into the finals, and now we want to be the champions. So.
Hey, why not? And remind them that this is only on Facebook, right?
It is
this
on
is
Facebook.
All on Facebook.
It's on Facebook, so you can go. And I know many people have signed up for Facebook just so they can vote for Eagle Crest, which is great. But you can visit our Facebook page, and we're trying to put out a lot of content out there about what's going on at Eagle Crest, some amazing photos, and just kind of keeping everybody engaged.
Okay, and how did everything work on the 18th when you guys were at the Red Dog?
That was a lot of fun, and it was great to have the Red Dog help us out with that, and that was our Rock the Vote, and a lot of people came out. You know, it was a work night, a school night, so everybody went away early, but it was fun to get out there and get everybody kind of starting to get their ski friends back together.
Nice. And can you update us on the conditions at Eagle Crest? What's it look like now? And when I was talking to you before, we didn't have a whole lot of snow up there yet. You were making everything.
Yep, we're coming along. We're actually going to open for the season Saturday, December 7th. We'll just have the Porcupine Chairlift open, which is our beginner chairlift, but we're excited to get open for the season. Lift tickets will be $15 for adults and seniors and teens, and $10 for youth and children. And we'll have regular price rentals. The Snow Sports School is going to be offering discounted lessons, $39 for a lift lesson and rental. And we'll have a terrain park feature on Dolly Varden, and Muskeg will be ready to go. And so we're just inviting everybody to come on up, get their season pass pictures, get their ski legs or snowboard legs underneath them. And if you haven't ever learned how to ski or snowboard, hey, take advantage of our $39 special and start the season out right. See what all the buzz is about with Eagle Crest.
That's right, Jeffra. Everybody needs to get out and get skiing.
Yep, it's a much better place to spend the winter up on skiing or snowboarding than it is down here at sea level. So.
And we still have some season passes that are out on the Juneau auction site. So for KTOO, please check those out. There's still some season passes that are getting bid on, so I encourage everybody to take a look at all the auctions that we've got running and place your bids accordingly. We always need stuff for Christmas time.
Yeah, excellent.
Okay, thank you very much, Jeffra, for coming in and updating us on what's going on in Eagle Crest. And everybody vote for us so we can win the Ski Town Throwdown this year.
All right, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming in, Jeffra.
Into that crossroads bar. Well, I went inside and sat me down. Ordered some red wine, Lord, I drank it down. She came and sat beside me there with a dark brown eye and a red ribbon hair.
That's a little bit of the song called Girl at the Crossroads Bar. This is from the Great Alaska Bluegrass Band, and they are going to be in town this next weekend. I don't know exactly the date and time yet, but figured I would run a little bit of their music to give you an idea what you might be expecting. Rain County Fly Fishers is presenting the Fly Fishing Confluence Films documentary Waypoints tonight. This is December 4th at 7 p.m. in the Thunder Mountain High School Library. Waypoints features beautiful photography of fly fishing scenic locations in Chile, Venezuela, India, St. Brandon's Atoll, and Southeast Alaska. This meeting is open to the public at no charge, and for more information, call Tony Stolitz at 789-9159. Again, that's tonight at 7 o'clock. And it's great having you all listen to me here on KTOO Juneau. This is a Juneau afternoon. KTOO broadcasts, rebroadcasts on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K220 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI channel 871 on your digital cable. We're also online at ktoo.org. And support for national programming on KTOO always comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and viewers like you.
There is just one thing I need. I don't care.
banks are not what has driven Detroit over the edge.
The Detroit bankruptcy, what it might mean for pensions there and beyond.
It's Wednesday, December 4th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Also in this hour, are settlements with banks helping homeowners?